This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ed Chu. Dr. Ken Miller has this session off this morning. I'm the chief medical oncologist here at the Yale Cancer Center. And just for you folks who are new to the program, Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists and cancer specialists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut. Each week, Ken and I are joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center, and together we review the latest information about cancer detection and treatment available to cancer patients and highlight the advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help and hope, and we're here to answer your questions. If you'd like to submit a question about cancer to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu, or you can call 1-888-234-4YCC, and we will answer your questions on air in a future broadcast. And if you're interested in listening to past editions of Healthline, or if you'd like to learn more about a specific kind of cancer, all of our shows are now posted in audio and written formats on the Yale Cancer Center website at www.yalecancercenter.org. And I would also just note that actually all of the shows are now actually on iTunes and are in iPodcast format. Today our program focuses on the trends in the treatment of cancer. And our very special guest is Dr. Vincent DeVita Jr., the Amy and Joseph Perella Professor of Medicine at the Yale Cancer Center and former director of both the Yale Cancer Center and the National Cancer Institute. And it really is a special treat to have the chance for us to chat with Dr. DeVita about what really is, I know, near and dear to his heart, which is really how we fight and how we win the battle against cancer. So Vince, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline, and it really is a great honor and certainly pleasure for me to have you with us.
My pleasure, Ed.
So, Dr. DeVita, let's maybe start at the beginning. And I know it's interesting, kind of, the world always kind of tends to come around. You actually had your training here many, many years ago,
right,
at Yale New Haven Hospital,
right,
and I think had the very good fortune of working with one of our very close friends, colleagues, mentor, Paul Calabrese.
Yes, I did, yeah. Paul was here. He left about mid-term when I was here, and then I went back to the National Cancer Institute where I stayed for about 26 years. And then returned via New York to Yale. So it's like a lemming. You tend to come back where you trained.
That's right. Yeah. And in many ways, I guess my history is very similar.
Yeah.
I had my roots here at Yale, actually also with Dr. Calabrese, went through Providence, then went to the NCI to be trained under you and all of your senior leaders, and now came back to Yale under your leadership.
Yeah. A fortunate move for us.
So obviously, the vast majority of your career in cancer has been spent at the National Cancer Institute. Perhaps you could just tell our listeners, you know, what was so special about the culture and the environment at the National Cancer Institute?
Well, I was in the medicine branch at the time, and you really, because of the nature of the program, that is, you know, you work there, you didn't have to apply for grants. Patients were admitted to the hospital to be studied, and you could select the type of patient that you wanted to study. So you really were only limited by your ideas, sort of what's, you know, between your ears, and not by financial constraints and so on. So at a time, the cancer field was brand new at the time, and there were some very radical questions being tested, one of which was whether drugs could cure cancer. When I started in the field, the feeling generally was that chemotherapy wasn't worth the toxicity that you got when you used it, and if it did benefit people at all, it only benefited by palliating them, maybe prolonging their life a little. So the environment at that time when I was there was, could you cure cancer with drugs? And we had two experimental models, if you will, the acute leukemia of childhood and Hodgkin's disease. And the programs that were developed at that time were very radical. People looked askew at us because we were doing things like using drugs in combination, which were not considered the norm for the time, and set up those experiments. And the answer turned out to be yes. And because it was yes, you could begin to use drugs in other circumstances, like after surgery and breast cancer, when patients didn't have any evidence of disease, but you could surmise from the way they presented that they would have disease and treat them, and that has turned out to be successful. So those experiments in the 60s in that very cloistered environment were very exciting and I think very important to the way the field has evolved.
And I think for our listeners out there who may not be aware, Dr. DeVita really was one of the pioneers and the leading experts in developing the first cure for Hodgkin's disease and then subsequently for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah.
And it was really a huge advance.
Yeah, it was when you're present at miracles, it sticks with you. It for us, it was a miraculous observation. I came, you know, before I came to the Cancer Institute and before I was at Yale, I had never seen patients with advanced cancer respond to anything. I only saw these kinds of patients really pass away from their disease. So when you're in that kind of environment and you see that kind of thing, and we're seeing it so much now, you know, that it stays with you forever. And that's what really attracts scientists to places like Yale, because you have the tools at your disposal to change how the field moves.
And I guess what really was so special, is so special about the National Cancer Institute and at a place like the Yale Cancer Center is the focus is on trying to identify and develop new treatments, new potential cures for cancer patients.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of fine cancer centers in the country, including Connecticut. And there's this distinction between an NCI, National Cancer Institute-sponsored center, which Yale is, one of the 39 comprehensive cancer centers, and a cancer center that's a private cancer center. Private cancer centers deliver state-of-the-art treatment. Places like the Yale Cancer Center develop state-of-the-art treatment and at the same time, of course, have to deliver the state-of-the-art treatment. But if you look at all the private institutions around the country, they are using therapies that were developed at either places like Yale or Harvard or Duke, other cancer centers in the country. And that's the role of the cancer center, really. You know, take what's developed in the laboratory and translate it into use in the patient population.
And in fact, when you were director of the National Cancer Institute, the Cancer Center's program was really initiated under your very careful guidance.
Right. I was there when Yale got its first grant and watched it very closely because by that time I had already been to Yale. And several of our colleagues that, you know, you and I know, Dr. Young, who's now president of Fox Chase, and Bruce Chabner, who's a professor at Harvard, had already also followed me and come up and had their training here at Yale. So we watched Yale very closely. And one of the reasons we watched it was the strength of the science at Yale was extraordinary then and is extraordinary now. I mean, as you know, Ed, the cancer pharmacology was a very young field, and Yale had the strongest cancer pharmacology program in the country. So we always looked there for leads of new drugs that could be developed. So
obviously, the Cancer Center's program has been very special to you.
And it's one of the features of growing older is you have the perspective of seeing how this program now has been in its growth phase now for 32 years, and you can see it go from the beginning when it was not easy to get this kind of a complicated program going to where they now are doing exactly what they were proposed to do when the National Cancer Act was passed in 1971.
And in fact, it's becoming more and more competitive as more and more centers would like to have the designation as a comprehensive cancer center and have that kind of good housekeeping stamp of approval from the National Cancer Institute.
right? That, you know, they have to do that. You have to have all the goodies. You know, an institution can't be a comprehensive cancer center unless it's comprehensive. You have to be able to do what we call cancer control programs that focus on preventing cancers from occurring, as well as clinical trial programs, as well as outstanding basic research, which is the hardest thing for most institutions to do because it takes a long time to build basic research programs. And, you know, like as I said before, Yale's always had a very strong basic research program.
Now, one of the other things that I think happened while you were at the NCI was the passing of the National Cancer Act.
Right.
And perhaps you could just let our listeners know why that Cancer Act was so important.
Well, it was important because it spent $55 billion of your money, your tax dollars, and the question was it well spent? You know, you read articles about we're failing in the war on cancer, but there was a very simple mandates mentioned in the Cancer Act. It said that the program should support research to reduce the incidence, morbidity, and mortality from cancer. And if you look at what's happened, we have reduced the incidence. Since 1990, incidence has been going down. Morbidity from cancer is much less. If you look at breast cancer, for example, what used to happen in 71 and what happens now in the treatment of breast cancer, however difficult it may be, it's radically different. And mortality rates have been falling since 1990. In fact, the projection is by the year 2015, mortality rates will be down 24% measured from 1990. So it has fulfilled its mandate. The controversial part was, you know, there were some people who thought it might happen in 5 years. It took a long time. It took 2.5 decades to get these things to go. But it really was worth the effort. And I think one of the most successful stories in biomedical research in the history of the federal government.
Great. Well, maybe we can discuss this a little bit more on the other side of the break. At this time, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to healthline@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC. At this point, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about the trends in cancer therapy with Dr. Vincent DeVita from the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there is a new hope for these women. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. In 2006, more women are learning to live with this disease than ever before. Women should schedule an annual mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments, which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration, available to patients. For more information, visit their website at yalecancercenter.org. That's yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm here in the WTIC studios with our special guest, Dr. Vincent DeVita, an internationally known expert in cancer treatment from the Yale Cancer Center. So, Vince, before the break, we were talking about the National Cancer Act, which actually was signed in 1971. Right. Maybe you can give us an update as to where things stand, because as I understand it, you've been involved with the National Dialogue on Cancer, which also focuses on really trying to push forward the agenda for cancer therapy.
Yeah. Well, as I said earlier, you know, the mandate was to reduce incidence of morbidity and mortality from cancer, and that has been dramatically done. What is even more dramatic, and I think what just amazes me every day, is we went from what I like to call the black box. You know, cancer was a black box. You could weigh it, you could look at it, you could turn it around and turn it upside down and so forth, but you couldn't see what was going inside. With the monies that were given to research institutions like Yale, and Harvard, and other places, we have now opened the lid of the black box and we see the gears go around. We actually now know how cancer cells talk to one another, how normal cells talk to one another, and we know how cancer cells avoid the signals they're supposed to be receiving to stop growing, and we now are able to develop drugs specifically for the targets that are not functioning correctly in a cancer cell. I mean, this is, in 1971, this is the kind of thing you only dreamed of. It took a very heavy investment in research, and about 80% of all the dollars of the $55 billion that went to the cancer program have gone into the laboratory to study these things. And they're now, the wave of molecular medicine is just now hitting the shores of the oncology clinics. And it's one of the most exciting times I've ever seen in my entire life. So I think it speaks well for being able to get a real handle on cancer and drive the mortality rates down even further in the next 10 years.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. As you suggest, I think we're now just beginning to reap the benefits of all of that hard work that really was required for us to be able to understand what made a cancer cell tick.
Yeah, this, you know, what made the program controversial was that the 20% of the dollars that didn't go into the laboratory went into refining existing treatments. And a lot of the reductions in mortality I mentioned are from the application of that kind of research. The molecular research took a longer time to reach fruition, always does, these very complicated things. And so here we are, you know, 30 years later, and we're now reaping the benefits of that money in basic research, and it's really extraordinary. I don't know anybody who isn't excited about the way things are going now in terms of understanding what the cancer cell is doing and why it's a cancer cell.
Yeah, I think for a clinical oncologist, it's like a kid in a candy store. There are just now so many different options that we now have available to offer to our patients.
Yeah, and it actually presents a problem for us, and it's in a way a nice problem in the sense that it's very complicated to develop these kinds of treatments. It's very complicated to test them in humans, and there's years ago you had to go to scientists and say, you know, I'd like to get you more involved in what we're doing in the clinic. Nowadays they knock on your door before you can get out of your seat, but it's extremely complicated to do clinical studies in the current environment that we live in. We have so many regulations that have to be followed and so forth. So it's a complex enterprise that we're still, you know, working through to get these things to the patient just as quickly as we possibly can.
And again, maybe for the benefit of our listening audience, there's been a tremendous focus on identifying novel targeted therapies for cancer care. And perhaps you could just explain that so that the people out there could understand what that means.
When I started in the field, we developed drugs and we judged whether they could kill cancer cells. We didn't know always why they were killing cancer cells. And even when we could figure out how they worked, we didn't know what specific target they were hitting. When I said before that we now know how cells talk to one another and we know how cancer cells break down in that conversation, each step in that signaling system in a cancer cell is a target. And now you can develop drugs specifically for a target that's broken and in some cases repair it. And the nice thing about treating cancer is if you're using, say, gene therapy to repair a long-term defect somebody has, you have to do it on a permanent basis. In a cancer cell, you only have to hit the target, make the cancer cell vulnerable, and then destroy it using one of the other existing tools. So targeted therapy is because we now know what the targets are, and we can develop a drug specifically for those targets. I personally believe that when we did the work in leukemia and Hodgkin's disease with combinations of drugs, and I think we're still going to be required to use combinations of drugs, but they're going to be combinations that have specific targets. We know what they are. And the good news is that they generally have fewer side effects than the old drugs that the target was broadly DNA in the cell.
Yeah, that's the one question I was going to ask you is do you envision a day where we may never have to use those cytotoxic chemotherapies that you really, you know, were at the forefront in developing?
I do. I mean, I think things are happening very fast, and I believe that we'll be able to put together combinations of these very specific drugs that will work without having to use things that make patients very sick. But again, it's a regulatory dilemma for patients people in the audience. Regulatory meaning dealing with the Food and Drug Administration, to be able to combine drugs that are owned by different drug companies and so forth is very complicated and occupies a lot of Dr. Chu's time when he's trying to develop clinical protocols. But again, that's one of the reasons why we have cancer centers. And cancer centers have the resources and the capability of doing these kinds of things that can't be done really in smaller institutions. It's expensive and it's very complicated. And I'm very, very pleased at what I've been seeing happening at Yale in recent years to get around these hurdles.
Now, in addition to developing new therapies, I think one of the other mandates for a designated comprehensive cancer center is to develop new approaches for cancer detection, screening, and addressing the issues of cancer epidemiology, public control of cancer. Perhaps you can just expand on that a little
bit. Well, I mean, you know, screening has been quite successful. I mean, some years ago, there was a lot of newspaper articles saying that we had an epidemic of breast cancer. We didn't have an epidemic of breast cancer. What happened is the use of mammography went from 14% of the population to about 75% of the population, and we were picking up breast cancers that might have killed people that caught early enough so that they wouldn't. So people realized that we didn't have an epidemic, we had effective screening. The other thing is that cancer of the colon, the mortality rates from cancer of the colon, have dropped in the past 25 years, 40%. Half of that is due to treatment. The other half is due to colonoscopy, which has been, you know, removing polyps and cancers so early that they can easily be cured. So when we have an effective screening tool, the application of it results in some very interesting, you know, declines in mortality for that particular disease. The current one is whether or not CT scans are something that we should be using for patients who smoked who are at risk for lung cancer. Not quite settled yet, but an interesting study that recently came out, you know, addressing that question.
And for those of you listening out there today, being an expert in the area of colorectal cancer, I can't emphasize enough that if you're over age of 50, that you need to have a colonoscopy screening, because again, that as Dr. DeVita said, is the gold standard for picking up polyps, picking up early cancers. And what's really quite striking is that at most maybe 25 to 30% of the population will go get screening for colon cancer.
You know, the good news about getting a colonoscopy is that if you have a colonoscopy and you have no polyps, that the interval between the first colonoscopy and the second colonoscopy is really quite long. I mean, it's usually somewhere between 7 and 10 years. So it's really worth going. And if you come out clean, you don't have to worry about doing colonoscopy every year.
Although I would say, actually, as one who's already had 3 colonoscopies, the preparation, the liquids that you have to take are actually getting much better.
Yeah. My wife just had hers, and she said that's the worst part of it, just taking the liquids.
At this point, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to healthline@yale.edu, or again, you can call 1-888-234-4YCC. At this point, we're going to take a short break to listen to a survivor story. Please stay tuned to learn more information about trends in cancer therapy with Dr. Vincent DeVita from the Yale Cancer Center.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Guilford.
My name is Kathy. I am a cancer survivor, and I am the mother of 3 girls. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 40. I had had my baseline mammogram at 36, but with no family history of breast cancer, I was told to return when I was 40 for another mammogram. I got the diagnosis that no one prepares you for, cancer. But I was lucky. I was referred to the Yale Cancer Center, where I met Dr. Lannan. I underwent a double mastectomy in the summer of 2004. I still take tamoxifen daily, but have been cancer-free ever since. If there is one message that I want to convey to all women, it is to get a regular mammogram. I am a perfect example of how early detection is part of the cure.
This survivor's story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm here in the WTIC studios with our very special guest, Dr. Vincent DeVita, former director of the National Cancer Institute, former director of the Yale Cancer Center, and one of the senior professors here at the Yale Cancer Center. So Vincent, in our last segment, I thought what we would probably do is focus a bit more on the future and your thoughts as to where we're heading. So we started off by talking about the National Cancer Institute, National Cancer Act, and where do you see the future of cancer research, cancer therapy?
Yeah, you know, as you said, the future is in all the targeted therapies and in using the same information we have about the broken signaling system in a cancer cell to prevent a cell from becoming a cancer. Now, we now can actually find some of these early abnormalities in patients who don't have any evidence of cancer at all and develop preventive methods so cancer patients don't have to be treated, they have to be prevented. Those are even more complex studies than treatment studies because they take relatively normal populations, and there are large populations. And again, we have a very effective program at Yale, headed by Dr. Susan Main, who actually does a lot of this. So I think we'll be doing many more preventive kind of studies using the same information about abnormal targets, and the therapies will be comfortable kinds of treatment for high-risk people initially. As I said, I think the cancer treatments are getting easier. They have been. I mean, if you look again at something like breast cancer, 25 years ago, women had a radical mastectomy. That would mean moving the breast and removing the muscles on the chest wall. The arm would usually swell, and then they would get radiation therapy postoperatively, and it was disfiguring, and didn't deal with the problem of cancer cells that had gotten outside of the area of the breast. And now the way treatment is done, even with the older methods, lumpectomy and radiation therapy and chemotherapy, while the person today who's getting that treatment feels it's very difficult, and it is, it's nowhere near as difficult. And I think we're going to see the same change in treatment in the next 10 years. It's going to become treatment for chronic disease. Cancer. You'll live with cancer, or your cancer will be eradicated or kept under control by drugs that you take like a vitamin pill, and the mortality rates will continue to come down. I see the American Cancer Society had made that projection I mentioned earlier, that by 2015, mortality rates will be down by 24%. Their goal is to get them down by 50%, and I think they're going to hit their goal because their projections were made before a number of these studies recently came out that showed that you can effectively treat lung cancer when it's early, some of these very common cancers. So my guess is they're already behind, and we're going to see a 50% reduction in mortality by the year 2015, which will be, you know, a major advance.
And do you also see a time when we get away from giving chemotherapy on an empiric basis, where we really don't have a good idea of what we're doing or what we're giving, and moving more towards individually tailored therapy?
Yes. This has been very hard to do, but the fact of the matter is cancer cells are smart. And you know, we give our treatments usually once a week, and radiation therapists give their treatments 5 days a week. And I have this image in my mind of cancer cells laughing at us because they grow on Saturday and Sunday, and they grow between Monday and Friday. You have to have ways of measuring what you're doing with your treatment to be able to give it exactly when you need to give it as opposed to next week's clinic. And I think the tools are now in hand. We have imaging techniques that allow us to do that. We can measure biochemical effects of treatments. And I think you'll be taking an individual patient, you'll be looking at their abnormality, giving them the right drug, and then measuring the response to that drug so that you know if the next dose should be given 36 minutes later, you're going to give it 36 minutes later, not next week. Mm-hmm. And then we'll outsmart the cancer cell. We never had the tools to do this, but with the $55 billion invested in cancer research, the tools are now here. This is a kind of a radical statement, but I'll say it anyhow. I think there isn't any major question in cancer research that cannot be addressed today with the existing tools. The problem is sometimes the experiment would cost $20 million, and we have to get them to the point where we can get the cost down a little so we can do all the necessary studies. It's a remarkable revolution in our understanding of cancer.
Yeah, no, it really is a very, very exciting time. I just want to maybe end on a couple of things that I know you're working on. One is you're the author of what I believe is the definitive textbook in oncology, and what I think many people, including myself, feel is the Bible for all of oncology textbooks, and that's Cancer Principles and Practices of Oncology. You're now in the 8th edition.
Yeah.
How did you get started with that?
It's a long story, but the point is there was no balanced text when we did this. We started working on it in 1979, and there were texts on chemotherapy, there were texts on surgery, there were texts on radiotherapy, but there wasn't one text that put it all together. And my colleague Steve Rosenberg and Sam Hellman, who also, by the way, Sam was here at Yale. He was trained in radiotherapy. That's where I met him. We got together and decided we would do that, and it has been very successful. Thanks for the plug. We just now started the 8th edition, and it's always very exciting because we started a year early because of the changes in the field that are taking place. We felt that the book needs to be updated more often, so it's coming out more frequently.
Well, and it's certainly a privilege for those of us who you've invited to be part of that book, because it really is very, very special. And I know you're also working on your memoirs, if you will, focusing on your thoughts, your ideas, insights into this whole war on cancer.
Yeah, I was there when the Cancer Act was started. I was there before the Cancer Act was passed, and I've watched the whole field go by, and I'm really writing a story of what led to the Cancer Act and how the war on cancer progressed, because it is, as I said earlier, a very controversial subject. And I think the public, this is for the lay public, if you put, the public put $55 billion of their tax money on the table, and they deserve to know how it happened and how it was spent, and that's what the book's about. I'm writing it with my daughter, who was on your show a couple of weeks ago, I think.
Terrific. Well, we look forward to reading it. If you have questions for Dr. Vincent DeVita or for Healthline, we encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information about cancer and the resources available to you. Vince, it's been great having you, and we look forward to having you come back on the show and to have further discussions, and also to read your memoir. Remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will feature a discussion of multiple myeloma and the issue of survivorship with our special guest, Dr. Mel Goldstein, a cancer survivor and meteorologist at News Channel 8. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu, and also on behalf of Dr. Ken Miller from the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.